Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Homeowners insurance is getting more expensive and harder to keep. And in our region, here in the Mountain West, one of the most important causes is climate change-fueled fires, wildfires. Recent federal data shows non-renewals spiraling in many places and annual premiums jumping hundreds of dollars from one year to the next. We're also in this hour going to talk about how state leaders are trying and struggling to get reforms passed. So we welcome in Mountain West News Bureau Boise reporter Murphy Woodhouse. Murphy, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Very glad to be here to talk about this important issue.
Interesting, in your bio here, you have experience as a wildland fighter yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. I did a short engine season while I was doing my undergraduate and then did three full seasons on the Type 1 hand crew based out of Pocatello, just north of you all.
Yeah. I'm sure that informs your reporting on this. Rachel Cohen is Mountain West News Bureau reporter for KUNC. Is that correct, Rachel?
That's correct. Thank you for having us.
Thank you. Anything you'd like to say about your background, Rachel?
No wildland firefighting in my background, but yeah, I've just been chatting with Murphy about this issue for a very long time. And, you know, we came together because even though our states are pretty politically different, this topic was coming up again and again. And, you know, it just felt like something that really tied our region together.
And here in Utah as well, and I'm sure we'll get into some of the specifics. Also noted just the last day or two, a story published in the Salt Lake Tribune about this in the St. George area. In a law that I had not been aware of that was passed, apparently, this legislative session in the Utah legislature regarding this. So a lot to talk about. Let's just jump in and hear your two reports, shall we? We'll hear them back to back.
Studios of Boise State Public Radio News. I'm Samantha Wright, filling in for Jim Agudet. This is Idaho Matters. Homeowners insurance is getting more expensive and harder to keep in our region. One of the most important causes is climate change-fueled wildfires. Recent federal data shows non-renewals spiraling in many places and annual premiums jumping hundreds of dollars from one year to the next. For example, in Idaho's Boise County, non-renewal rates nearly tripled in 5 years. In the first of our insurance crisis series, the Mountain West News Bureau's Murphy Woodhouse takes us to a rural Idaho community that's been particularly hard hit.
It's an unseasonably warm spring weekday in the rural Idaho town of Crouch, an hour drive north of the capital of Boise. Cars pass slowly by the Dirty Shame, a popular restaurant and watering hole. The Middle Fork of the Payette River meanders a few hundred yards away, just shy of where it meets the main branch in the stunning Garden Valley. High and thick mountains rise many hundreds of feet in all directions.
What a beautiful day to come to Crouch.
Yeah.
I'm there to meet Sandy Nabefeld and her husband Dave, both in their 70s. Sitting in the shade on the bar's front porch, Sandy, a former Boise nurse, explains they bought a lot nearby in 1990.
Thinking that after we retired, we would come up to Garden Valley and make that our home.
For several decades, their property was insured without issue. But then, 5 or so years ago, they received notice that their policy would not be renewed.
It was shocking. It was like, oh my God, all of our investment here in this house. What are we going to do, Dave?
The first emotion is anger. So why can they do this to us, you know? We paid our bills on time for years and years.
They say their insurer told them the decision was based on wildfire danger in the area. With the help of an independent agent, the couple found a new policy, this time with auto owners. But in June 2023, another letter came.
You are hereby notified in accordance with the terms and conditions of the above reference policy that the insurance provided by such policy will cease.
The letter explained auto owners was also trying to reduce its wildfire exposure. A company spokesperson did not respond to a list of questions regarding the cancellation.
I wanted to deck somebody.
For a second time, they turned to their insurance agent and found a third policy. But after two non-renewals,
I'm afraid, you know, that I'm going to get a third letter.
More and more such letters have been arriving in surrounding Boise County. In 2023, nearly one in 30 policies were not renewed, the highest rate in the state, and triple what it was in 2018. Colorado, Montana, New Mexico, and Wyoming all have multiple counties whose rates at least tripled. That's according to data released by the U.S. Senate late last year as a part of a probe into what it called the climate change-driven homeowners insurance crisis. A major recent analysis from the U.S. Treasury's Federal Insurance Office found that the West had some of the sharpest premium jumps. The FIO identified several key factors behind these trends, including rising rebuilding costs, continued development in high-risk areas, and increasingly common and severe climate-fueled disasters like wildfires.
They should be very worried.
And not just rural Boise County residents like Sandy and Dave, says Idaho Insurance Commissioner Dean Cameron.
We're hearing those kind of complaints from all over.
And if nothing is done to address it,
it will continue to spiral in the wrong direction. And the spiral gets wider and wider.
The retirement home that Sandy and Dave dreamed into being is a stately log structure, a short walk from the Terrace Lakes Resort's 18th fairway. Dave built it with the help of two others.
How many hours did you personally put into building this home?
Thousands.
The retired Boise firefighter has taken a number of measures to keep the home safe. It has a metal roof, and drain rock forms a non-combustible ring around the structure. There's a fire hydrant up front.
And there's another one in the back. I got 100 pounds of pressure.
Insurance or no, the couple intends to live out their remaining years in the home.
You have to prepare yourself.
And if the flaming front ever comes, he says he's ready to do whatever it takes to protect it. For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm Murphy Woodhouse.
And in the second part of our series, the Mountain West News Bureau's Rachel Cohen shares how state leaders are trying and struggling to get reforms passed.
A stone's throw from the Colorado Capitol early this spring, Michael Conway was preparing to make a case to lawmakers. He's the state's insurance commissioner.
Something bad has probably happened in your life if you know what the state insurance commissioner is.
Conway insurance companies providing car, health, and home insurance are following the law. It's an under-the-radar but vital role, especially as disasters like hailstorms and wildfires hit our region more often. More than 3 years ago, over 1,000 homes burned in the Marshall Fire, the most destructive in state history. And since, Colorado's home insurance market has never been more shaky.
We have insurance companies that are making decisions to not write throughout the entire state like they were previously.
Homeowners are freaking out.
Douglas Heller is an advocate with the Consumer Federation of America. He says people all over the West are paying more for insurance if they can find coverage at all.
So they're calling up their lawmakers. They're calling anybody who will listen and saying, what do I do?
Some state leaders are hearing their calls. A Mountain West News Bureau review found at least 13 bills introduced in 7 state houses in our region this year that try to tackle this issue. Some would clarify how insurance companies assess risk, and others would make communities more resilient to blazes. Conway's first fix came a few years back when Colorado set up a state-backed insurance safety net for people turned down by private companies.
If you can't find insurance coverage, you don't have the ability to buy or sell a home.
The program went live last month and people are signing up, but Conway says it's not enough.
Commissioner Conway, welcome to the House Finance Committee. Please state your name, who you're representing. You have 2 minutes.
Good afternoon, Chairman Lindstedt and members of the Finance
Committee. So he went back to lawmakers with an idea for how to make insurance more affordable. The big bill, as he calls it, is complicated. One part would set up a state fund to absorb one of the fastest growing costs for insurance companies, the insurance they buy on the global market.
We want to take on part of the risk of the wildfire events that happen in Colorado and offset those insurance costs for our homeowners.
And he had the support of Governor Jared Polis in this year's State of the State address.
Just as Lord of the Ring fans know that one does not simply walk into Mordor, one does not simply fix homeowners insurance. But we need to start somewhere, and we need to start now.
But some state leaders worry too much regulation could scare off insurers. Carol Walker with the Rocky Mountain Insurance Association says it's not an empty threat.
We want to stay in your state. We want to sell insurance. But if we have to gamble on us being able to pay out claims, that's not a risk that we can take.
Her group initially opposed the bill in Colorado, and it ended up dying. Lawmakers were wary that the plan required homeowners to pay an upfront fee before they'd see any potential savings. Senator Judy Amable was one of the bill sponsors and called the defeat a disappointment.
We're now opting to do nothing about a runaway freight train that is going to hit all of us.
But even over in Idaho, where Conway's counterpart tried a more conservative approach, they also came up short.
Unfortunately, we've got some work to do with the legislature.
Idaho Insurance Commissioner Dean Cameron proposed a grant fund to help residents prevent their properties from burning in wildfires. But the proposal failed. So did a resolution just to study the issue.
We have to help them understand why this isn't an expansion of government.
Some efforts did have success in Mountain West state houses. A separate bill in Colorado could give property owners more credit for wildfire mitigation. Another in New Mexico paves the way to certify properties as wildfire prepared. But the majority of measures we reviewed failed. Conway and Cameron say they'll be back in front of lawmakers next year, worrying that without solutions, the problem will just get worse. For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm Rachel Cohen.
So there's the two reports. So we are talking with Mountain West News Bureau reporters Murphy Woodhouse and Rachel Cohen, who did those two reports. So Murphy, I want to start with you. People might say, well, you know, you just have your house and not have it insured. And if it does burn up, then you lose everything, okay. That's a pretty cold hearted way to view it, right? But it's not as easy as that, right? Insurance is bound up in the whole real estate market.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And certainly, Sandy and Dave and the many thousands of people in similar situations would probably frame the issue very, very differently. I mean, in their case, I mean, you know, lots of people in rural, beautiful places like this, you know, sometimes these are like second homes or vacation homes. But many, like for Sandy and Dave, I mean, this is their home, and that home represents much of the wealth that they have built up over their entire lives. And so for them, I think it's very easy to imagine the enormous stress of having such a significant investment, something that, you know, he is, you know, sweat and blood equity. He's poured thousands of hours into making that home a reality. So I don't think it takes much imagination to just kind of put yourself in their shoes and imagine that stress. But then you do raise what I think is the most significant knock-on effect of the insurance crisis. Like, why is the problems we're seeing in the insurance market a much broader, perhaps even systemic problem? And it's precisely because real estate markets rest on functioning insurance markets. Most people, the vast majority of us, do not have hundreds of thousands of dollars in cash or other liquid assets with which we can just purchase homes willy-nilly wherever we would desire. The vast majority of us have to turn to mortgage lenders to be able to afford homes. And the vast majority of mortgage lenders require current insurance policies to even issue those mortgages. Why is that the case? Because in the case of mortgage debt, homes serve as the collateral. If you're the lender, the idea of having your collateral turned to ash is obviously not something that's going to be acceptable to you. And so when insurance markets start to get shaky, real estate markets can also be deeply threatened. And this is exactly what the U.S. Senate Budget Committee said when they released all of this non-renewal data late last year. They warned of the prospect without aggressive action on climate change, that there is the real possibility of collapses in property values and the possibility of triggering a crisis similar to what we saw in 2007 and 2008. I don't think I'll need to remind most of your listeners how devastating that time was. And so, yeah, the insurance crisis is a problem for a number of reasons, but its knock-on effects to housing markets, to real estate markets, that makes this like a potentially very significant systemic threat.
Murphy, it struck me, and I think it struck you as well, that you were talking, one of the gentlemen you were talking to is a retired risk management expert, and he's caught up in this. In fact, he might have to sell. If he gets another non-renewal notice, he might have to sell.
Absolutely. Yeah. So you're talking about Kip McBean there. So we didn't hear him in the story, but, you know, he had an utterly fascinating story to tell. You know, he spent his entire career in insurance and retired last year, literally as Boise State University's risk and insurance manager, a top insurance official at a major public university, someone obviously much more informed than the average person about insurance, how it works, the systems it ties into, et cetera. And so even he was, you know, basically surprised by what he ultimately saw when he purchased his retirement home up in the Garden Valley in Idaho. He told me that, you know, when he first when he bought that home in 2018, annual insurance premiums were around $1,000. But then in just the last couple of years, mostly that ballooned to nearly $2,000. He subsequently, you know, did find a skimpier policy. You know, I can't remember all of the details, but, you know, found a policy with a lower price to kind of keep those jumps in check. So, I mean, I think it's just kind of, you know, bracing and important to recognize that, you know, in that story, we have a retired firefighter, obviously a profession that gives you a great deal of insight into the sorts of risks that exist in the wildland urban interface. And, you know, he's used that knowledge to, I mean, they literally have two fire hydrants on your property. How many people do you know that have literal functioning fire hydrants on their property? And then here we have someone who spent their entire career in insurance. And both of these folks are feeling just, you know, taken aback by the situation. So for the rest of us, those without, you know, decades in the insurance industry or decades responding to fires, I mean, it's like if they're taken aback, like good luck to the rest of us. But then you also raise his experience or kind of his anxieties of the situation moving forward. So, you know, when I met up with Sandy and Dave at the Dirty Shame, that's where I also met up with him. And he basically just kind of listened into a lot of their experience. And I'm sure it had been on his mind before. But, you know, I think in some ways, I think there's been a lot of focus on the premium issue, significant increases, in some cases, quite dramatic increases in annual premiums. But, you know, if it's just premiums going up, ultimately, you know, you can still buy it. I mean, it's going to be expensive, but like, it's still available, right? But what about when it's not available for any price, right? Like that's the sort of situation that we're starting to see in a lot of these places. When you get non-renewed, I mean, that leads to quite a stressful scramble to find another policy, because your mortgage lender is going to insist that you have coverage, because again, the home is the collateral for that debt. Yeah, I mean, he's been thinking a lot, I mean, not just about these premium increases, but then also the prospect of being non-renewed. I mean, I think one of the basic realities of the situation that's important to keep in mind, mortgages are issued for many years, 15, 20, sometimes 30 years, right? And so I think this is like one of those situations where small numbers are actually big numbers, right? Like with climate change, we're talking about like a degree or two of change, which, you know, maybe at first, I mean, you hardly notice a degree or two difference from one day to the next. But when we're talking about like, you know, system-wide ongoing changes, the effects are very dramatic. So when we're talking about non-renewal rates of 2% or 3%, that may sound kind of low until you think about, oh, that's in a single year. That's one in 30 policies in a single year. Or if you think about it in terms of the length of a mortgage, you know, what are your chances of getting a non-renewal over the 30-year length of a mortgage, right? That's when this starts to get pretty scary. And so, yeah, I mean, he very frankly told me that, you know, if he gets one of these non-renewal notices, he's going to try to sell his property, right? And those are going out all over the place. So, I mean, just like start doing that math in your head, right? I mean, if you're doing one in 30 properties every single year, you know, next year, that's another one in 30. Next year, that's another one in 30. And that's presuming that those rates stay fixed, which of course they're not, right? I mean, like in Boise County, which is where I did this reporting, that rate in just 5 years nearly tripled, right? Right next door in Blaine County, that rate quintupled in 5 years. So these are moving figures. Like 2 years have lapsed since this data was current. So who knows what's happened since. So yeah, I mean, like, I think it's very easy to understand. If you're unable to insure your property, if you're regularly dealing with the stress of finding the coverage that's mandated by your lender, right? I mean, like, people go to move to places like this for rest and relaxation and just, you know, taking in the beautiful views in their retirement years. And if that means dealing annually with the uncertainty of whether or not you're even going to have insurance, like, that situation starts to change pretty quickly.
I want to turn to Rachel Cohen. You reported on legislatures, I guess, attempts to change policy to help ameliorate this. I guess the first question is, imagine advocates, people like the people that Murphy talked to, would probably say the legislature is not dealing with this with enough urgency. What are people saying? Are legislators getting a sense of urgency on this?
You know, I think they increasingly are recognizing this sense of urgency, and that's because homeowners like the ones that Murphy talked to are, you know, increasingly in a bind. And when they don't have options, you know, they're often calling up their elected officials, whether it's their county commissioners or state lawmakers or insurance commissioners like the ones that we talked to. And so I think what's interesting about this moment in our region is that there seems to be an increasing level of agreement on the problem. That's not the case across the board, but, you know, it really seems like, you know, across the political spectrum, there is this level of agreement that the insurance markets are, you know, maybe not working out for most for homeowners, especially those in high risk areas. And so because of that, it was really interesting to look around our region at states that, you know, were kind of coming to this realization simultaneously and asking what they plan to do about it, because the responses to this, you know, shared problem look pretty different.
I want to ask about the industry. What the industry's attitude? We've heard about the problems of the people trying to get insurance, right, being refused, premiums going up. What are industry representatives saying about their pressures and why they're doing this?
Yeah, I mean, insurance companies, for the most part, are also saying that the market is tough for them too. You know, they're seeing, you know, climate change fueled disasters rack up costs like they've never seen before. You know, that puts them on the hook for, you know, payouts and costs that are skyrocketing too. So, you know, they're kind of in a bind and wanting solutions too. It's just sometimes their ideas of solutions don't necessarily line up with what consumer advocates are pushing for. And so, you know, in many states, the insurance companies are, you know, not always fans of increased regulation. And, you know, what I heard is that in some states, the costs are just increasing so much that, you know, the companies in those states are not even like profitable in given years. And so they're saying, you know, we can't take on the increased costs of what these extra regulatory burdens will mean for us. And in the end, you know, consumers and communities, you know, you might suffer from that. And so when lawmakers hear that message, oftentimes what they're trying to do is walk this fine line. They're hearing from the consumers, like the ones Murphy talked to, and they want to put in policies that will help those consumers. But they also are responding to insurance companies, and they want the insurance companies to stay in their states because at the end of the day, consumers need insurance, like Murphy talked about, if they want a mortgage, if they want to buy or sell a home. So it's kind of a requirement in many cases, and state lawmakers are trying to walk this really fine line of, you know, wanting to support consumers, but not wanting to put so many burdens on insurance companies that they are not writing policies in high-risk areas of the state, or they're leaving the state entirely.
I want to go to a break here in just a second. Murphy Woodhouse, what Rachel just said kind of underscored something here. So Kip McMean, he's the retired risk manager. He said he might have to sell, but if he can't get insurance, if the property can't be insured, then he can't sell, can he?
I mean, that's probably going to be really complicated, right? When you get non-renewed, I mean, that doesn't mean that you're not going to be able to find another policy, right? I mean, like in the case of Sandy and Dave, you know, they've been non-renewed twice. In both instances, they, you know, using independent brokers, they have been able to find other policies. And so, yeah, I mean, like getting non-renewed is not the end of the line, but it does mean that you're going to have to scramble to get insured to be able to keep your mortgage or to not get on the wrong side of your lender. But then also, I mean, I think it's just pretty easy to imagine or to put ourselves in the shoes of people on either side of this transaction, right? You can certainly understand Kip McBean's concerns and his interest in perhaps wanting to sell. It's like, I mean, do you really want to just keep dealing with this uncertainty year in, year out? You came here for beautiful relaxation, not battling insurance companies to get coverage. Like, you know, in the wake of these stories, I've talked to people who, like, you know, basically said that they had to beg insurers to cover them. And so yeah, you can understand what this looks like from his vantage. But then if you're looking to buy, like, even if, you know, he ultimately, you know, say he does get, let's just, like, I mean, he has not been non-renewed yet. He's afraid of it. Certainly be interested to kind of follow that situation. But, you know, like, you know, say he does, you know, is that a situation you're going to want to buy into as, you know, someone looking for what he was as well? So, like, I don't know. I mean, I think it's pretty easy to imagine how this could pretty quickly impact, you know, demand for properties and places that are really struggling with access to insurance. Would you, Tom Williams, would you want to buy a home that is difficult to insure? Mm-hmm. If you had such a home, would you want to keep it? I think these are very simple questions, and I think that the answers to both of them are pretty clearly no.
Yeah, yeah, it certainly is. So you can see how this could spiral quite quickly. Let's do take a quick break. We're talking about homeowners insurance getting more expensive and harder to keep. And we're talking with two Mountain West News Bureau reporters, Murphy Woodhouse and Rachel Cohen. We'll have more following this brief break. You're listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Homeowners insurance is getting more expensive and harder to keep. And in the Mountain West, one of the most important causes is climate change fueled wildfires. Recent federal data shows non-renewal spiraling in many places. Annual premiums are jumping hundreds of dollars from one year to the next. And we're talking about this. We're also talking about how state leaders are trying and struggling to get reforms passed. We're talking with Mountain West News Bureau reporters Murphy Woodhouse and Rachel Cohen. Murphy Woodhouse, just briefly at the beginning of this segment, there's an interactive map, I think. Where can we find that?
Yeah, absolutely. So our stories are, you know, they're published at our many member stations, and I believe would have been published by Utah Public Radio online. Certainly on Boise State Public Radio, where I'm based, the headline is a home insurance crisis is building in the Mountain West. State leaders are struggling to respond. The listening to the stories, I think that's very important. I think it's very important to hear directly from these people, listening to the stress and uncertainty in their voices. But online, one, you'll get a lot more in-depth information. But then also there are a couple interactive maps that I think your listeners would find extraordinarily interesting. So I built an interactive map using the U.S. Senate Budget Committee's county-level non-renewal rates that spanned 5 years, 2018 to 2023. And so on that map, you can toggle between those years just to kind of, I mean, like I'm doing it right now just so I can kind of you know, share that experience with your listeners. So I have it on 2018 right now. I have it color coded to shades of red. So the West basically looks like a, you know, largely pretty light reds across the entire region, including Utah. And then you click 2023 and things darken dramatically in many places. And so, you know, where we did the reporting, just to kind of reiterate those numbers, you know, Boise County, which strangely does not include the city of Boise where I am, went from 0.98% in 2018 to 2.87% just 5 years later. That's a near tripling. So that's extremely dramatic. Just next door, Blaine County, which I think people in Utah will know better as the home to Sun Valley, a major, very important resort community, that went from 0.54%, well under 1%, to nearly 3%, a quintupling in 5 years. I mean, these rates are moving extremely quickly. Just across the border in Wyoming, Teton County, which includes Jackson, this is, I mean, just extraordinary. I mean, it's something I frankly have difficulty even believing, but it went from 0.25% to 3.74%. That is a nearly 15 times increase in, again, just 5 years. But let's take it to Utah. So I'm just jumping around on this map. I'm going to go to Summit County, a county that is very well known in your state, home to Park City, one of the world's most famous, or the West's most famous resort communities. There we see something very similar to Boise County, starting at 0.89% in 2018 and jumping to 2.59% in just 5 years. That is a near tripling. Just south of there, Wasatch County, 0.73% to 1.93. Again, that's pretty close to a tripling. But it's not just there. Those are likely two of the more dramatic cases, but many counties in Utah are seeing significant increases over this time frame. And I mean, yeah, I mean, there are certainly counterexamples. I mean, there are counties in Utah where the rates actually declined over that period. Most counties in Arizona, I believe, actually declined over this period. I mean, you know, the West is a diverse place, lots of different sorts of circumstances, but like the overall picture is just very, very clear. It is getting more expensive to have insurance, and it is getting more difficult to keep. And what I'd also like to point out, so, you know, I think that map is pretty good at illustrating that that county level non-renewal data from the U.S. Senate. But then two groups, the Revolving Door Project and Public Citizen, so there's kind of like two key federal sources of data. And I think it's also just important to say very quickly, like it really was until last year and early this year that we even had this quality of nationwide granular data on this phenomenon. It has been extraordinarily difficult to get this sort of detail from the industry, but there have been some real breakthroughs there, including by some independent researchers who have very cleverly found ways to do this. But below the map that I built, you'll find zip code level data on certainly non-renewals, which is, I think, probably one of the most important metrics here, because it's like, yes, the price increases are important, especially if you're on fixed income or just otherwise, you know, don't have a lot of money to spare. But I think like non-renewals are really, really stressful. Like actually going naked for a bit or facing that prospect is extremely destabilizing. So you can actually get even more granular with that data. The time range is a little more limited. It's just 2018 to 2022, but you can literally just go through and like find your zip code. You can find non-renewal rates. You can find non-payment cancellation rates. You can find average claim amounts, paid loss ratios, average premiums. And so, you know, if your listeners are concerned about this issue or just interested in it, we have some really great interactive resources on the online version of the story. So, I mean, you can see, I mean, I think what's kind of happening right now across the West is leaders are becoming aware of the significance of this. But I also think that like for a lot of people, this is something that they've experienced kind of isolated, right? Like they get their letter. This is a problem that they're dealing with. I think a lot of people are becoming aware that this is something affecting a lot of their friends, family, and neighbors. And I think that tools like this, I mean, again, it's like it really has only been within the last year or so that we've even been able to talk about this problem in such extraordinary detail.
Yeah, I did find it on our website, upr.org. Just search for interactive maps, and you'll get to that. Very fascinating to see that. I want to turn back to Rachel Cohen. So remind us which measures passed, what sorts of measures passed, and then we'll ask you what failed and what still needs a lot and still needs to be done. But lawmakers are trying to chip away at this. So what was successful?
Yeah, so at the time of publication, we had counted 13 different bills across 7 states in our region. And when we published the story, 4 of them had passed. Since then, 1 more has. And the rest have like either didn't get enough votes or didn't make it to a hearing. And so, you know, that told us that, first of all, state leaders, they're trying to solve this problem. They're also trying it in many different ways and, you know, from different angles. Some are trying to, increase transparency for consumers. Others are trying to help communities actually lower their risk that exists on the ground. So like cleaning properties, getting rid of like your deck that could burn next to your house, that sort of thing. Other states are saying, you know, we need to give insurance companies more flexibility because that will, you know, help boost our market and make them more likely to write policies in our state. And so, you know, the number, I guess, of bills that passed is fairly small. And I think that indicates a few things. One is that at least in our region, some of these ideas are fairly new, like they're borrowed from other states or other regions, Florida, occasionally California. But in our region, you know, a lot of them are being tried for the first time. And so we don't really know the effect that they're going to have on the insurance market. And that sometimes is scary for lawmakers to jump into. Another one that we've already touched on is insurance companies often push back on these policies that seek to increase regulation or requirements on insurance companies. Other reasons is that the policies could cost upfront money. Like if a state wants to create a grant fund to do wildfire mitigation, sometimes that involves fees. And there are questions about who pays those fees, who gets the benefit. And so these are all questions that lawmakers this year have been talking about and dealing with in our region. One bill that did pass actually was in Utah.
That's
and I
right.
think you referenced it mm-hmm. earlier. It was House Bill 48. And I actually spoke with the bill sponsor of this legislation, Representative Casey Snyder, to learn a little bit more about what he was trying to do. And, you know, essentially this bill, I think it started out with kind of a skepticism or frustration with the data that insurance companies rely on to assess risk and to, you know, tell homeowners essentially if they live in a high risk area or not. I think there was some sense in Utah that those maps were not always accurate, and so people might be penalized for living in a high risk area when maybe they didn't really think that was accurate. So the state went through some processes to create its own risk maps and data, and they wanted the insurance companies to use this to assess risk. And so part of the goal there, Snyder told me, was to, you know, hopefully like stop penalizing people who were not in the so-called WUI, but also for those that were to actually assess a fee on them that would go into a program to help, assess their homes for wildfire risk, maybe tell them what they could do to bring down their risk, and then pass on that information to insurance companies to hopefully help them, you know, retain coverage and maybe lower their premiums. You know, I think there's a sense that because this is so complicated and, you know, the end goal is maybe lowering premiums, making insurance more accessible. But, you know, to actually get there, it requires some like complicated market dynamics. And so there's a sense that we're going to need to watch to see how bills like this one play out and how they affect homeowners and insurance availability. And, you know, I think Snander told me that this was kind of the first attempt in Utah, but that lawmakers will likely be back to you know, fine tune it and to maybe bring forward other policy ideas.
I want to just point out, it's very interesting to me. This is Mark Eddington's story in the Salt Lake Tribune talking about this. So he quotes a Mr. Pike. I didn't get his first name. He's a former mayor of St. George. So this area we're talking about is near St. George in Ivins. So Mr. Pike went to an insurer and said, I'd like you to do an assessment. And they came back with a pretty high premium. And they said, it looks like you have some trees that are a little close to your home and you have some asphalt shingles on your roof. They had used Google Maps. And he responded, those trees have been gone for 7 years and I've never had asphalt sink shingles. So that's where some of the skepticism about the maps comes in. So Murphy would have, and I guess I should point out as well, not on the maps, but on mitigation efforts. Dave, the retired firefighter, right? Two fire hydrants, metal roof, the clear back, the whole lot of, he knows what it takes, right? To fireproof, right. And still getting high through the roof, premiums. What are the people you talk to, what are the outlines of a solution here?
Yeah. I mean, I think Rachel kind of sketched that out very, very well, which is to say that, like, I don't think that people really know fully what a solution is yet. I mean, there's lots of experiments underway, lots of sorts of pilot projects and whatnot. But, like, I mean, no one, to the best of my knowledge, has solved the insurance crisis. This is something that we're going to be keeping a very close eye on in the months and years to come. But on the other hand, like, there are some ways in which we already know what the solution is to significant degrees. Like, you know, the U.S. has faced historically many times in which fires were regularly destroying vast swaths of cities and communities. And, you know, a lot of the way that was solved was through building codes and zoning regulations, strict enforced rules about where you can build and how you can build. These are things that are obviously quite fraught in the West. Many people identify the ability to build where and how they see fit to be kind of a core constitutive element of the sort of like freedom, I guess, that we enjoy in the rural West. But I think, you know, something that's increasingly been on my mind in this reporting, and, you know, certainly, you know, in my background as a wildland firefighter, is I think that conceptualizing this is principally a responsibility of individual homeowners, I think, is just like a really limited framing, and one that I think has a real hard ceiling to how well it can actually solve the problem. Certainly, Dave and Sandy have taken a lot of the key measures and with the fire hydrants, like, almost comically gone above and beyond. You know, as we saw in LA, the Marshall Fire, many similar incidents, I think that we should really be thinking of these not as, you know, problems of individual parcels and homes, but problems of entire neighborhoods and communities. So there is a way in which, you know, we think of destruction of homes and property as a function of the wildfire itself. But there's a lot of thinkers out there who are saying that we have that precisely backwards. Like, these are problems of the built environment. When you have incidents like LA, it is no longer shrubs and trees carrying the fire. It is the homes proper. The homes become the fuel. And so, you know, Dave and Sandy, I think, have taken a lot of measures, but what if their neighbor has taken none, right? When you're talking about homes fully engulfed, I mean, they're putting off major, major flame lengths, really, really crazy heat. You know, this kind of is, in some sense, kind of a, you know, a weakest link situation. Like, you can do everything you can at your home, but if you're surrounded by homes that have taken no measures at all, you know, you might be out of luck. And so I think moving forward, I mean, like a way of approaching this that I see a lot of hope in is really making it possible for entire neighborhoods and communities to take action, to get safe together. I mean, this really is an all together problem. This is not something that's going to be solved by putting the onus on individual homeowners. And then also I do want to just say, like, we keep saying homeowners over and over and over again. I am not a homeowner. Many people in the West are not homeowners. We are renters, right? We don't even own the properties in which we live. And so I think, like, real solutions here are going to take into account all the different sorts of people that live in these places and the real financial constraints that many of them face. Some of these measures, while extraordinarily effective, are expensive. And so, I mean, yeah, I think we need to be thinking bigger and on a larger scale to really solve this. This is a social problem. This is not an individual homeowner problem.
Rachel Cohen, we'll give you the last word. What do you take away from this reporting? What comes next, do you think?
Well, you know, everyone that we talked to really said that this is going to take a while to figure out. It certainly wasn't ever going to be the case that it would be solved in this legislative session. So, you know, from Utah to Idaho to Colorado, I think we can expect more policy solutions being floated on this topic, and also more follow-up work to see how the ones that are being enacted are working out in the marketplace. And I think aside from legislation, one thing that some like advocates really hit home for us was that this insurance crisis, if you want to call it that, it's a symptom of a larger issue, which is climate change. And if we are not tackling climate change by reducing emissions or even adapting our world to this, the increased level of disasters that we see with climate change, the insurance problems that we're facing are not going to go away. And so I think that's one thing that will, I think, be happening in tandem with this policy discussion is that, there's also just actions that people say need to happen in order for this problem to at least be mitigated in some capacity.
Well, we'll leave it there. Much more to say, and I'm sure you guys will be reporting on this. And you can hear those Mountain West News Bureau reports right here on Utah Public Radio. We've been talking about homeowners insurance, and we've been talking with Murphy Woodhouse. He's Mountain West News Bureau Boise reporter. Murphy, thanks so much.
Real pleasure. Thanks for the interest in this really important topic.
Thank you. Rachel Cohen is Mountain West News Bureau reporter for KUNC in Colorado. Thanks.
Thank you.
And thanks, everyone, for listening to Access Utah.